If you've got pew Bibles, then we're on page number 927. I said we'd look at this story from four different perspectives, and the first is Jonah. What do we know about Jonah? We know that he was a prophet. And a prophet is someone that God has called and set apart so that God can speak to people through him. So Jonah was one of those people. He would have been a gifted preacher. People would have flocked to hear him. He was mentioned in already, so he's quite famous. He's mentioned in the book of Kings, the second book of Kings. He was a prophet in the days of King Jeroboam II, who was one of the great and mighty kings of Israel. So that's Jonah. Someone who has spent all his life serving God faithfully and to the best of his ability. Someone who uses the gifts that God has given him and speaks words that are both challenging and encouraging. And he's done it all his life. When you think of Jonah, think of a faithful prophet. And now God's asking him to do something new, something that takes him outside his comfort zone, outside the boundaries of the known, and something that's going to be very difficult. Verse 2, go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it because its wickedness has come up before me. And Jonah's not keen. And one of the main reasons why he's not keen is because Nineveh is an enemy of Israel. Jeroboam II was one of Israel's most successful kings. He was a great general and he had managed to expand the boundaries of the kingdom almost back to the great days of glory. So the people of Jonah's day shared this common sense that God was on their side and God was looking after them and them alone. Look at what's happening. Look at our greatness. Look at our glory. They were the people who felt blessed by God. And if there was one dark cloud on their horizon, it was this place called Nineveh. Because as the years of King Jeroboam's reign passed, they heard more and more about the growing might of the Assyrians. And the Assyrians' capital city was Nineveh. The Assyrians, it was a growing empire, and it was spreading out its tentacles in all directions, and it was swallowing up lesser nations as it came, and it was heading their way. So if that was the one dark cloud on the horizon, it was the city of Nineveh. So Jonah's not very keen. He's not very keen to go anywhere near the place. He's happy to serve God in his own land, but to go and bring God's message to Nineveh, that for him, that's crossing a boundary. And I don't just mean that as a silly pun. I mean, that's crossing a line, and he's not prepared to do that. And so, as we all know, he goes in the very opposite direction. Nineveh's up in the northeast, he heads west. He goes down to the port, and he finds a ship that's bound for Tarshish, which is in Spain, okay? So he's heading away from Nineveh, but he's also heading away from God. He's getting as far away from all of this stuff as he possibly can. So that's Jonah, and that's Nineveh. Now we meet the sailors, okay? The sailors are not Israelites. Israelites wouldn't get in a boat if they could help it. Israelites weren't sailors. They were afraid of the sea. So these sailors are pagans. They're not Hebrews. We know they're pagans because when the storm comes, they all start praying to lots of different gods. That's what pagans do. They're trying to cover all the bases, if you like, just in case one of them works. They even wake up Jonah and say, why don't you pray to your God? Maybe that one will work. Okay, so that's where the sailors are coming from. But just because they're pagans doesn't mean they're not good people. When eventually they discover that Jonah is the cause of the storm, and when Jonah says, well, you've got to throw me overboard, that's the only way to deal with this. No way. Look at what they do. Verse 12. Jonah says, pick me up and throw me into the sea, and it will become calm. I know that it's my fault that this great storm has come upon you. But instead, they did their best to row back to land, but they could not, for the sea grew even wilder and wilder. These are good people. They're anxious to get through the storm, but they want to get through it together. They're going to look after everybody who's on board, including Jonah, even if it's his fault. They're going to try and get through this together. They're good people. They're also very open in their faith. They're even willing to pray to Jonah's God. He's not their God, but they're willing to give him a go. Verse 14, they pray, O Lord, please do not let us die for taking this man's life. Do not hold us accountable for killing an innocent man. And eventually, when the sea calms again, they're still willing to acknowledge who has caused the sea to calm. They're still willing to acknowledge God's sovereignty. Verse 16, when the sea grew calm, the men greatly feared the Lord, and they offered a sacrifice to him and made vows to him. So here we have the sailors, good men, pagans, but still open to God's presence, still open to God's truth, and still willing to change when they see his power at work. And so at last we come to God himself. What does all this say about who he is and what he's like? Well, first of all, we learn that he really is the Lord of sea and sky. Jonah, you see, had thought his power was limited to the land of Israel. So if I go off to Spain, he won't be there. I'll get away from all of this nonsense. Now he discovers that his God actually is the God of heaven and earth. He discovers for himself that our God really is a great big God. His spirit is both here, his spirit is everywhere. There is nowhere in the world that he cannot reach. He is all present and all knowing. It's an idea that's captured in Psalm 139. Here's verse 7. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up into the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. There is nowhere where we can get away from God. And that may sound a wee bit claustrophobic and scary, but there's actually another side to it. And the flip side is there's nowhere where God will not be at hand to rescue us. Again, Psalm 139, if I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there, your right hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. Our God is a great big God, and he holds us in his hand. So that's the first thing we learn about him. The second thing we learn is that he really is the God of miracles. He really is the God of miracles. He can do surprising things, astonishing things, things that we cannot understand. Nothing is impossible for him. We're told in verse 17, the Lord provided a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was inside the fish 3 days and three nights. Amy R. Ewing, that young mother of three, is also a Hebrew scholar. And one of the things she pointed out at the Bible studies was that when it says the Lord provided, in Hebrew that word provided actually could mean four possible things. One of which is provided, but it could also mean the Lord prepared, or the Lord arranged, or the Lord appointed. So, the Lord provided, prepared, arranged, appointed. Maybe it means all four together for a great fish to swallow Jonah. You know, when it comes to miracles, God is like the conductor of an orchestra. He weaves all the coincidences together to form a complete miraculous reality. He is the God of miracles. We don't know much about this fish. We know that it was big. We know that it had the capacity to swallow a man whole. We know it also must have had a cavity big enough inside for him to survive for 3 days. But we don't know how that happened. We don't have any remains that we can dissect. All that we know is that whether by creation or by mutation or by location, the God who created the world had the power to do this. He is the conductor, bringing all the events together in concert and at the right time. So at the right time, this great fish is there. God is a God of miracles. We talk about this at Alpha. We talk about the fact that if you live in a world where God is present, where his spirit is everywhere, then you don't have to believe in coincidences anymore. If If you just open your eyes and take your blinkers off, you can see God active everywhere. And there are many times in my life when so many things have been brought together in concert that it's hard to explain it away as pure coincidence. Our God is the God of miracles. But more profound still, and it is actually more profound, we learn from this story how God's ways are not our ways. The whole story of Jonah is the story of the God who does not give up on people. The God of second chances. You see, it doesn't matter who you are. You could be a faithful prophet who has run away, or you could be someone who's never had any faith at all. You could be someone from the most respectable of neighborhoods, or you could be someone from the most evil, wicked place in the world. But he's still the God of second chances. He gives a second chance to the sailors. The sailors are godless pagans. They're just doing their job. They get caught up in something. How many people do you know who are just doing their job? Maybe colleagues you work alongside. Maybe people you do your shopping. They serve you when you go shopping. You see, God is their God as well. And who knows, maybe he might, just like he used Jonah, maybe he might want to use you to make a difference in their lives, to open their eyes to great possibilities in their lives. God gives a second chance to the sailors. The sailors respond. God gives a second chance to the Ninevites. And the Ninevites respond. More about that in a minute. But he also gives a second chance to Jonah himself. Notice there's no fanfare of trumpets, no angel chorus, no Steven Spielberg ending to all of this. Instead, there's this lovely image of him getting vomited up onto the sea. Can you imagine what he smelled like? He'd been in a fish for 3 days. Can you just imagine that? What's the first thing he's going to do? Have a bath. It's just a lovely image. It's a very humbling image. There's the great, famous preacher Jonah, who thought he knew better than God, lying in a puddle on a beach somewhere. It's a very humbling image. And maybe it's saying something to Jonah about who he is in the scheme of things. And maybe it's trying to humble him as he heads off towards Nineveh to complete the task that God has given him. God's ways are not our ways. Our God is the God of second chances. Maybe there's someone here who loves those words, who's thinking, oh, I'd love to have a second chance. Maybe there's something in your life that you just wish had never happened, and you'd love to have a second chance. You'd love it for just to be washed away so you could start again. You know, if that's you, then it's God who's brought you here today. There are no coincidences. God has brought you here today to hear those words. God is the God of second chances. And then the final lesson. God is calling us to become more and more like him. His ways are not our ways, and he's calling us to become more and more like him. Because if you noticed, in the story of Jonah, there are echoes of a much, much greater story which was yet to come. A much, much greater story. In the midst of that storm, Jonah realizes what's happening. He realizes why it's happening. What does he do? He realizes someone has to pay. Someone has to make the ultimate sacrifice. The life of one person for the life of many. And centuries later, in the temple courts in Jerusalem, when all the religious leaders are trying to catch Jesus out and they're demanding a sign, show us that you're the Messiah, show us. Come on, we're here, we're ready, show us. Jesus replies with these words. They're in Matthew 12. He says, no sign will be given except the sign of the prophet Jonah. Of course, then we have to think, well, what sign was that? The life of one given for the life of many. God's ways are not our ways, and He is calling us to be like Him. He's calling us to live for others, whoever they might be, whoever they might be. And so here are some questions for us all to think about today. Firstly, how big is your God? How big is your God? Do you limit Him to certain places and certain times? Are there places where you don't think He is? Are there places you go to get away from Him? How big is your God? Second question, how great is your God? Do you see Him as present and active in the world all around you, or do you confine His power to spiritual things? You know, spiritual things. How great is your God? When you pray, do you ask Him for your heart's desire? Or do you think, He's got an awful lot on His plate right now, I don't want to bother Him? Which is another way of saying, I don't think He cares, and I don't think He's big enough. I don't think He can do it. How great is your God? How much are you willing to trust Him with? Thirdly, how gracious is your God? We've already talked about the sailors. What about the Ninevites? You know, I think we all have Ninevites in our lives. They could be, on a huge scale, they could be rogue nations or rogue political movements or terrorist organizations. You know, but they're the enemy. They are out to do us harm. On a much, much smaller scale, they could be the person who bullies us at work, the person who always gets their own way, the person who deceives, the person who always makes sure as they come out on top, the person who is the cause of our friend's marriage breaking down, the person who's the cause of our friend being in depression. You know, we all have Ninevites in our lives. How gracious is your God? We all have these people, and the last thing we would want is for them to know God's grace, for them to become Christians, for them to walk through these doors and become part of our family. Oh, no, I couldn't bear that. See, that's where Jonah is when it comes to Ninevites. At the end of the book, we discover he's a bit like the elder brother in the story of the prodigal son that we're going to be looking at next week. He gets cross because God doesn't kill them all. So I knew you wouldn't kill them all because you're gracious and merciful. That's why I ran away from you. You're far too nice. And perhaps the greatest irony in the whole book is not God's grace. Because it's not God's grace that Jonah resents. It's God's even-handedness. Our God is a just God. He's a fair God. Jonah doesn't seem to mind it when God gives him a second chance, but he minds giving him the Ninevites a second chance. How gracious is your God? How willing are you to become more like Him? Because becoming more like Him may mean dealing with some of those things in your life that you find hard to deal with. It may mean trying to be loving and forgiving to some of those people you find the hardest to love and to forgive. God is calling us to become like Him. Shall we pray? Just a question to reflect upon in silence. What has God been saying to you today? And what difference are you going to let it make in your life?